Good morning, everyone. How's your conference going so far? I feel the same. I'm Sheila McGurl. I'm the Director of Development for the Diocese of Wilmington in Delaware. And so why don't we get right into it and begin with our opening prayer. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Loving and gracious God, we ask you to open our hearts to your Son's life and ministry, and to answer the call to be his disciple. May our responses be rooted in the gospel. May we be ever mindful of the needs of our communities. And may our stewardship flow from a profound sense of gratitude for your many blessings. By the gift of the Holy Spirit, empower and inspire us to respond in a way that brings hope to others and reveals the love that comes to us through Jesus Christ. We ask this in his name, who is Lord forever and ever. Amen. So before I introduce our speaker this morning, just a few housekeeping things. I will give Kevin a high sign at the 40-minute mark. That means he has 5 minutes left for Q&A. And then I would ask all of you to fill out the evaluation form that's on the Whova app. And now it's my great pleasure to introduce to you this morning the founder and president of Lynch Development Associates, now celebrating its 30th year in business. While Lynch Development Associates is a consulting firm, those who have had the privilege of working or collaborating with Kevin know that his deep passion for our faith and his unwavering commitment to building up the church truly sets him apart. Kevin not only talks the talk, but he walks the walk, a native New Yorker. He's a proud father of four. All children were sent to Catholic schools. In fact, two of his sons were part of Notre Dame's championship lacrosse team, two national championships for that lacrosse family. I'm sure that was an exciting and proud moment for you, Kevin. Beyond his personal life, Kevin is most well known in our Catholic philanthropy scene as a leader in assisting parishes with overcoming debt. His dedication to helping dioceses and parishes get back on solid foundation for financials is a lasting legacy that he's left throughout the country. Given Kevin is not only a skilled leader, but he is also a mentor to many development directors, such as myself. In fact, two of our most esteemed development directors with us at ICSC are Richard Lanahan from the Diocese of Metuchen and Tom Smith from the Diocese of Newark. They started their careers in development with Kevin, and that's something to be proud of. Under Kevin's leadership, Lynch Development Associates has raised over $2 billion with an impressive average goal of 98%. Kevin and his team have worked with 47 dioceses across the country, making a remarkable impact upon our church. We're fortunate to have Kevin with us today as he presents, hopefully you're in the right session, diocesan campaigns and the importance of major gift research, identification, cultivation, and invitation. Welcome me, please help me in welcoming Kevin Lynch as the moderator.
Thank you. Thank you, Sheila. I hope this is as good a session as she just made this out to be. All right, couple of things. First of all, I come from an Irish family in New York, but I speak like an Italian guy from New York with my hands. So now the fact that I have to use a microphone and a remote, my hands may be flying all over the place during this thing. So don't be distracted by that. But thank you, Sheila, for the introduction. And as Sheila said, I've had the blessing and the opportunity over my life to spend and give my life to working in the Catholic environment, and our firm only works in the Catholic environment primarily because I just enjoy it so much. It's such an important part of my daily life, and we really, in our firm, we really, really want to have and make a difference, especially in a church that's challenged at this time over the past 20 years. And how do we have an, you know, it's in times of crisis that you really find your friends. And so many of you have become friends over the years, and we're grateful to be partners with you in this mission. So we're going to talk a little bit this morning, and the reason why we're focusing a little bit on diocesan capital campaigns, it is very applicable also in the parish side about major gift development, identification, cultivation, and invitation. It's very important for on all levels in the church to be thinking about this. But one of the reasons is because we're so darn afraid of it. And that's one of the things that I think, especially learning in New York, amongst the people who work in other faith communities, especially the Jewish community in New York, they're not afraid of this at all. So I don't know why we're so afraid of it on our side in the Catholic environment. But let's talk a little bit about how we go about doing this, because it's critical, and just like you're building a house, laying a foundation for what you're doing. And that's what we're really going to talk about a little bit today. So why are we afraid to ask for leadership gifts? In my 30 years of conducting capital campaigns, the apprehension, the anxiety, and the fear surrounding major gifts is palpable. It's unbelievable. I've had pastors that we literally had to feed Benadryl to because they were breaking out in hives with the idea that they'd have to go out and ask for a personal gift. And whether it's in the diocesan ordinary, the president of an academic institution, or the pastor of a local parish, this is prevalent throughout the church. One of the first questions I ask of a president of a school is I say, how many days are you here in your office? And they say, every day. And I said, that's the wrong answer. That's the wrong answer for a president of a school. President of a school should be out at least 3 days a week, meeting with alumni, talking with the alumni, and talking about the mission of the school. The ordinaries, meaning the bishops, the archbishops, and the cardinals, they don't like this. We have to think about them. Although they're in charge of the great metropolitans or the great diocese that they're in charge of, they still started out as priests in local parishes. So they still have that anxiety and that fear of doing that major gift visit. And there are many times where they are apprehensive and will look for any excuse not to do that personal visitation. And they shouldn't be afraid. But part of the role of being in these leadership positions is to ask for investment in the mission. That is part of their role as pastor, as president of a school, as ordinary. That is what they're supposed to be doing, is asking people to invest in the mission, talking about the mission and investing in it. Yet in diocesan life, we tend to use the passive ask of, let's send a mailing. Okay? Oh, if we do an extra mailing, we'll hopefully procure more donors. But many times, what are the donors that we're procuring? The lower end donors, right? Which is great for long-term development and cultivation if we do the long-term development and cultivation of those donors. So we tend to be a little bit more passive in what we do. One of the things that I talk to about with diocesan directors is, do you have a major gift aspect of your annual appeal? And 9 times out of 10, they're going to tell me no. And my next question is, why? Why don't you? That should be something that's happening every single year, okay? So we are leaving millions on the table simply because we don't want to hear the word no. That's the fear. Who in their life wants to hear the word no? When you're dating someone and it's a girl or a boy, right, that you're dating and you don't want to hear that you're not loved, right? That's something we don't want to hear. We don't want to hear no. When you're a child and you're asking your parents for something, you don't want to hear the word no. As a parent, is it difficult to tell your child the word no? Right? These are things that we fear. But in the Catholic Church, we are leaving millions on the table, millions of dollars on the table, that are being asked for by others. If you are not asking, someone else is. Okay? And one of the examples that I want to talk to you about today is just a recent example we've had in our experiences at Lynch Development. A few years ago, we started the diocesan campaign in La Crosse, Wisconsin, and we worked with Bishop Callahan, who was fearful of doing major gift visits. He had the best excuse book I've ever heard. Oh, I have a pedicure that day. You know, whatever it might have been, he couldn't make the visit, right? So one of the things that we realized is recently we've been working at a seminary in the Archdiocese of Milwaukee, St. Francis de Sales Seminary, which actually has 91 seminarians that are presently in the seminary from 11 different dioceses. It's a very robust and growing seminary. The Archdiocese of Milwaukee, if you're not sure, if you haven't been to Milwaukee, the Archdiocese of Milwaukee is situated right on Lake Michigan, and the seminary is right next door, and Archbishop Lisecki's residence is right there as well. So they're very connected properties. The Archdiocese of Milwaukee recently embarked on and was actually in the process of completing a $150 million archdiocesan-wide campaign, of which the major gift phase of that campaign raised approximately $8 million. $8 million of the $150 million. Everything else came from the parish solicitation phase. We came in as that campaign was ending and started a feasibility study and a campaign for St. Francis de Sales Seminary. Okay? We started a $50 million campaign in February of 2024. Okay? Just a few months ago. Which will end in July of 2025. The seminary has already raised $32.6 million from 49 leadership gifts. What does that say to us immediately? Boy, did they leave a lot of money on the table when they did that archdiocesan campaign. And why? Because they were fearful of having a significant major gift endeavor. We have been able to benefit from that because there are many people in the Milwaukee community who want to invest in the mission of the church. And we were able to secure that in just the period of since this past February. Okay? We really started, just so you know, we started the campaign in February. We started solicitations in April. April. It's only September. We're so excited. So we're about to launch this campaign on October 4th, and hopefully we'll be close to $40 million on the night of the announcement on October 4th. Why? Because we took the opportunity for the rector to go out and actually do personal visitation, and through identification, research and cultivation, we're able to secure significant leadership gifts. So these two Catholic entities, think about this. Their main foundation for their databases is almost identical. It's the same people, right? But the way and the process with which why we went to actually engage them was different. So in diocesan-wide capital campaigns, you usually estimated council will come in. Well, and this is all of us tell you, you could raise 1 to 1.5 times your annual offertory for your diocese. That's usually the basis with which we first start having that discussion. Okay? Many times there's a formula for parish share as an incentive for the pastors to become more deeply involved because, gosh, if we don't get the pastors involved, then, oh, we have to make sure we take care of the pastors because if they are not interested, they're not going to implement. Right? But we always implement in diocesan, I shouldn't say we always do, but the tendency is in diocesan campaigns to implement and to cater to the pastors with saying, oh, please, please, please do this, right, in a diocesan capital campaign, rather than by showing them a robust major gift campaign that will show them leadership in how to go about doing their campaign in their parish, how they could be successful in it, how they could actually engage their parishioners and have good foundational gifts to their campaign effort. So many times these share programs end up limiting the capacity of the diocesan case because now you're not going to raise as much money for the diocesan case because you're not going to have a robust major gift effort. And then the pastors aren't encouraged to challenge themselves to strive to raise more money through major gifts. Okay? It's important to educate and to train your pastors, okay? If the one thing that's the most gratifying for us as council is when on the local level, on the parish level, when a pastor says to us, I was so afraid. One of the things I do in my sales pitches to do campaigns is if the pastor's at it, I turn around right in front of his finance committee and say, Father, on a scale of 1 to 10, tell me, how much do you like doing personal visitations and asking for money? And they're like, -2. Right? They, almost all of them want to not do it. Our goal in doing their campaigns is to educate and train them to do the personal visitation so they build confidence in what they're doing and ultimately they have a good time doing it. Because when they have a good time doing it and they build greater relationships with their parishioners, it's a benefit to them in the long term. Many times the pastors don't come back and just talk about the gifts that they've secured. They come back and say, I got to know my people better. I know their families better. I know what's happening in their lives. They're sharing with me now, okay? And I've built a closer and better relationship. So in the archdiocesan diocesan capital campaigns, rather the ideal scenario would be in preparation for a diocesan-wide capital campaign to spend the time and fiscal resources to lay the groundwork for a robust major gift appeal, okay? Which, what would this do? It would significantly raise increase the monies that you would actually raise, okay? Expand the case statement of the diocese so that it, as well as the individual parishes, train the pastors in preparation for the upcoming campaign event, okay? This will also make the pastors more effective in their regular individual communications with their parishioners. Having that training on the front side for your parishioners and for your pastors, for your bishops, things of that, those people that are going to be doing the ask is critically important. If I told you, I'm going to ask you to, over a 6-month period, spend $400,000, but you're going to raise $20 million more. Seem like a good investment? I think so. On the return on investment, spend the time. Spend the time on the prospect research, the time to have your staff or your council. Spend the time cultivating and preparing your people for a major capital event because they don't come around as often, and you want to make sure that they're effective in their implementation. One of the things that's important to keep in mind with regard to giving in the Catholic faith is spiritual, okay? The spiritual motivation. Catholic donors often seek to express their faith through giving. People's giving should be an expression of gratitude to God for all of the gifts that they have in their lives. It's not that you need resources. It's that you're giving that donor the opportunity to express gratitude to God for all of the gifts that they have in their life. Okay? And gifts are seen as an act of stewardship, fulfilling the church's mission. That's what you're really trying to talk about, is the mission. Donors are more likely to contribute when the project or initiative aligns with core Catholic values. Education, social justice, faith formation, charity, all those different things that we try to do in diocesan-wide campaigns. The case statements of diocesan-wide campaigns are usually pretty robust. They have different facets to them, different aspects to them, so that this way there's different case items that you could raise funds for. This provides you the opportunity to align the donor's intentions with your mission as a diocese or as a parish, okay? And that's really important. And overall, it's a strong connection to the Catholic community and increases donor involvement and loyalty. If it's not rooted in prayer and faith, you're less likely to receive a significant gift. Because it's not something that people are doing it then because you have a need rather than they have a need to give. All right? And that's what you want to be able to create, is their desire to have a need to give. So how do you go about doing major gift solicitation? And everyone's like, how do you do that? How do you get someone to give you $1 million? Well, first of all, you have to find someone who's willing to give you $1 million. Okay? So the identification process and solicitation is important. So the process of identifying and cultivating high net worth donors to secure significant financial contributions is one of the goals of major gift solicitation. And in a Catholic context, it involves aligning the donors with the mission of the church or the particular Catholic institution, like a school, for instance, okay? So you want to help align those donors and say, why are these donors interested? Why would these donors be interested in our mission? And how do we make people interested in our mission? How do we make these donors interested in our mission? Okay? Why it matters. It ensures financial sustainability. There are many religious orders around this country that call us and say, well, we're in trouble. Okay, how can we help? Well, we educated all of the, especially religious nuns, we educated all of these children many, many years ago in our schools, and now we're in need, right? We have an aging population of nuns, and we need to help them. Okay, that's great. When was the last time you talked to all the kids that you educated? Oh, it's been about 30 years. Right? Why it matters, major gift solicitation, and talk about your mission is it ensures financial sustainability. You don't want to get to the point of crisis. You want to prevent the aspect of crisis in your life, right? So that's really important. It helps support large-scale projects, which are going to be important. The infrastructure of the Catholic Church, depending upon what part of the country that you're in, is either growing and building or decaying, right, and in great need of repair. The seminary building that we're working with in Milwaukee is 179 years old. That's old. Okay? HVAC systems. They didn't have them when they first built it. Right? All those different things are aspects of it that you need to be able to support large-scale projects. Strengthens the relationship between the donor and the Catholic mission. The more engaged that person is in what the mission of your institution is, the more likely they're going to support it, okay? And that's what's important is it's not about mission. I mean, it's not about money. It's about mission. If you talk about mission with people, you will receive the money, okay? But without money, you can't have a mission. So you need to focus on the mission so they give you the resources, and it becomes a cyclical aspect of how you operate. All right, so how do you begin? Beginning is research and donor identification. Data, 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 data. You have to start with data, okay? If you don't have good data, you cannot communicate. If you don't have email addresses, you can't email someone. If you don't have phone numbers, especially in a world that is turning around and you don't have mobile numbers and everyone's getting rid of their landlines, you've got a database issue, right? So you need to make sure that you're taking care of those issues. But data basically outlines for us financial capacity, past giving of history, involvement of Catholic organizations and ministries, and social ties to church leadership or community. So the more data that we receive and that we could actually go through, the better, because we can analyze data. Every one of our campaigns begins with statistical data. Every one of them. I have parishes call and say, we'd like to build a brand new church. It's going to cost us $12 million. Our offertory is $500,000 a year. Ugh. I'm sorry, you're on the wrong path, okay? You have to make sure that your data, right, meets your mission. And that's one of the things that's really important. The importance of research. Research helps understand a potential donor's capacity, philanthropic interest, and connection to your mission. And tools for research. Prospect research, software, wealth engine, donor search, things of that nature. It's not just important to run a wealth scan and say, well, we've got 25 donors that have the capacity to raise $1 million to $5 million. Yippee. Okay? We have to vet that. We have to understand that donor. We have to go deeper into that. And that takes time, resources, and commitment. Okay? Internal diocesan and parish records also provide you additional information and publicly aware available information on social media and news. So that's the first step. You got to get your data together. All right? The second step is then what criteria do you develop for your data? Data is great. Our databases are huge. We've got these huge databases that we create right from the feasibility study all the way through the campaign, and it takes notes on every single phone call. Every single edition, everything. Our directors are trained to do that because we want to make sure that in any given meeting, if Carrie turns around and asks me for information because we're doing her diocesan campaign, and she says, what's happening with these donors? We go beep, boop, 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 and tell them everything. Okay? And that's what's important with your donor identification criteria and creating it. What are the criteria that you're going to look for? Capacity. Donors with financial ability to give significant amounts and start to target them. Okay? Affinity. Donors with a strong personal connection to the Catholic faith or community. Your well scans may show that for the purposes of Catholic educational institutions, Catholic healthcare institutions, different things like that, but they're not going to show it on based on your parishes or things of that nature. That's going to come anecdotally from your people. Okay? Individuals with a proven history of charitable giving, especially to religious causes. We did a high school on Long Island, Chaminade High School, and it was a $20 million campaign. We raised $23 million for a new STEM building. And I remember they turned around to us and said, oh, that donor, he doesn't give to capital capital kinds of campaigns. And we pulled out the wealth scan and said, oh yeah, let me show you what he get. And they weren't going to go after that person. That person gave a $2 million gift to that campaign. Okay, so knowing your donors is really important and understanding their philanthropic history. Engagement, active involvement in parish life, Catholic charities, related organizations. That's a lot of that is anecdotal information that'll come. But basically, and then there's key stakeholders in your identification of donors. Parish priests, board members, ministry leaders, existing major donors can help identify potential prospects, right? You need to have those communications. And the thing that has to happen and what's really difficult in the church is it takes time to do this. Commitment. You have to be directed and be very specific and diligent about what you're doing, okay? Because the one thing that's difficult is when you get your annual budget from your bishop and you say you only have this amount of money to spend or this amount of time to spend, it becomes difficult to manage all of your resources. This is a valuable thing to do. The bishops have to understand that if they don't do this, there's about to be an $81 trillion transfer of wealth from the baby boomers to the younger generations. If you don't capture it, someone else will, like their children and their grandchildren, who it takes them only 24 months to 36 months to spend the bequest that they received from grandma. And that money's gone. It's much better for us to make sure with the donors that we have the opportunity to talk about legacy giving. We'll talk about that. With wealth screening, don't just ask for wealth screening and just look at the donor's capacity. You have to vet the wealth screen. We spend anywhere from 20 minutes to an hour and a half vetting one donor. One donor. Okay? And that's why we got the gifts that we received to the seminary. Make sure to validate all of their real estate and its present values. Be mindful of the foundation boards that they're affiliated with, and I'll talk a little bit more about this, because people we had one person make a $1 million gift, and then their foundation made a $6 million gift. Okay? Review their charitable giving and make sure it's them. Somebody with the name of John Smith is a tough person to vet, because there's a lot of John Smiths in the world. Review their political giving. Why is this good to know? Someone told me that right now we're in an environment that's kind of politically controversial here in this country. And you'd like to know who's giving to Democrats, who's giving to Republicans when you're going to send your bishop out or your pastor out on a visit. And that's important to know. SEC insider holdings, very important for stock transfer gifts. That's really important if people have stock that's given to them by their corporations. And their relationships and affiliations, this knowledge helps you to connect donors with one another. The wealth screening and identification is also to help create the foundation for you, yet there's more to be done. And this is a little washed out because of the white, but it says Google searches on the donors are very productive to learn about their interests in philanthropy. The internet's a scary place, but it provides you an awful lot of information. And one of the things that you'll find is local news feeds will tell you if people are named to a corporate board, influential leadership positions in your community, anything like that. What we do is for the rector at the seminary, we print out the articles to go along with his wealth scan profile. So when he's going to go visit someone, he is so read up on them that when he walks into the visit and they go, oh, by the way, did you know I'm on the board of the hospital? And he could go, really? But he's like, yes, I knew you were on the board of the hospital. Okay? All right? So that's really important. So wealth scans capture a great deal of information, sometimes large gifts, but what you may miss is somebody names a building or names a wing, things like that. That doesn't always come up on the annual reports in the donor search aspects. So you got to be, that will come from local news patch type of things, your patch.com or whatever it is from your local town. There's a tendency sometimes to overlook foundation affiliations when vetting donors. This would be a mistake. Many times these donors will make a personal major gift as well as help you solicit a foundation gift. So they could turn around and say, I'm going to make a $500,000 gift, but I'm also sitting on the board of this foundation. I'll help guide you through the grant process, and I'll advocate for you at the next board meeting for you to get $1 million gift. All right? And that's important to understand those relationships and build those relationships and cultivate them. Critical information from and outside of the wealth scan can come from sources such as Cause IQ. If you look at that website, you can actually see different foundations, and they'll give you what's called the Form 990. Has anyone looked at 990s before? Okay. 990s basically tell you the assets of the foundation, the officers and the relationships in the foundation, so you could help with getting your grants. If they have investment income, okay, that's being invested, so you could see them actually basically investing in itself, so it actually funds itself year to year and going onward. Grants made on an annual basis. Those are things like you'll see. Well, they've given to these different Catholic entities. This is great. This is a good opportunity for us to be able to get a grant from them. So it's really important in any annual fundraising activity that they do to replenish their coffers. Okay? So don't miss out on that aspect of your wealth screening. Step three is donor cultivation. One of the things that's tough and one of the things you'll hear about in the Catholic environment all the time is, well, the only time I hear from you is when you need money. Does anyone hear that comment? Donor cultivation. One of the things that I was at the benefit of watching the past 9 years as three of my children went to Notre Dame was how the development office engaged my family. Okay? So I had three out of my four kids go to Notre Dame. They played lacrosse at Notre Dame. We had one of the people from the athletic department that was actually dedicated to our family, or we were in their universe of donors, and how often they communicated with us and how they did it. And I got to know a lot of people in the development office at Notre Dame, so I kind of learned a little bit from them. It's always good in the development field to learn from them. And one of the things they do really, really well is build trust and relationships. And they identify what you're interested in. So a couple of months ago, my wife and I, as my last son was graduating, our development liaison came out to see us on Long Island, and we went out to dinner and sat down, and she opened up a portfolio and she said, these are all the avenues you can now invest in moving forward. Now that your children no longer are playing sports, there's other opportunities to invest in at Notre Dame. And I'm like, that's interesting. They actually took me from your kids were involved in sports, you're investing in sports, right? And now they're taking me on another journey. And that's what you need to be able to do, is to identify, build trust and relationships, personal engagement, regular communication, phone calls, meetings, invitations to events, things that basically, it's little, we always say in our training at Lynch Development, we tell all of our directors, this is not about bowling someone over, right? We're not trying to bowl someone over. We're trying to nudge you, right? We're going to nudge you. We're going to nudge you a little bit this way. We're going to nudge you a little bit this way. And then we're going to eventually get to know you better and then direct you into exactly how to give and how you like to give. So make sure that you're making phone calls, sharing the mission. Who is it that you are? Where is it that you're going? What is it that you want to accomplish? Okay? Prayer and spiritual connection. Invite them to events that show that you're not just asking them for money. You're asking them to engage deeper in their faith. Okay? Make sure that that's a part of your development program so that this way they understand. And thank them incessantly for their contributions and their participation. Gratitude is the best part of it because eventually they're going to say, stop saying thank you. We're grateful to be able to do it. Right? That's the relationship that you want to ultimately build. But tailor your approach to your donor's personal values, interests, and level of involvement with the Catholic Church. You really want to be able to understand who they are. Step four. Now, this is the part that everyone gets nervous about. Okay?
You hit the wrong button on your thing. You did the Italian thing.
Oh. See? I told you it was gonna surface. Sooner or later. Oh, I went too far now. There we are. Okay. So how many of you have ever personally asked for a gift higher than $50,000? Okay. $100,000. $150,000. $500,000. $1 million. $2 million. Okay. I can see who the askers are out here. Okay. Understand this when you're going, and this is the most important thing we train our directors to say and understand. The number doesn't matter. I know you're sitting there saying, what, you're going to ask me for $50,000 or someone's going to ask me for $1 million? It doesn't matter. No, it doesn't matter. Because if you were to ask someone who has a household income of $125,000 a year for a $50,000 commitment over 5 years, that's going to stretch them. If you are going to then ask somebody for $1 million who's worth $50 million, that might not feel as big of a stretch. So you have to keep in mind, you have to get that aspect out of your mind if you're going to be successful with major gifts. It's not about the number. It's about identifying the right commitment that you're hoping to bring that person to for the investment in the mission of your institution. Okay? So asking when you sense readiness from the donor, make sure that they have all their questions answered, they have a clear understanding of who it is and what you're trying to do. Framing the ask. Make sure that you're framing the ask in terms of how their gift supports the church's mission and advances Catholic values. Making sure that they understand that this is bigger than just a capital gift to a capital building. It's something about what the mission is doing in the long term and how it is that they're investing in the mission. And clearly articulate the difference between their gift will make in the lives of others. So how does it actually have an impact for other people? Best practices, personalized approach, collaborative spirit, emphasize that the donor is partnering with the church to receive something great, prayerful discernment, encourage prayer and reflection, especially amongst families, to make their commitment as a family, okay, and offer options. There's so many different options out there with regard to charitable IRA rollover, stock transfers, planned giving, all those different things are options out there. You have to offer it to people for them to discern and to consider. And if you know your donor well, you know which is the best one to talk to them about. Okay? Faith and prayer. Invite donors to see their gifts as an extension of their faith and begin the solicitation conversation with prayer and reflect on how their generosity fulfills God's mission. We always begin with prayer. Every major gift visit that we do, okay, always begin with prayer. And prayer for discernment. As you close it, let's pray for their discernment. Let's pray for their reflection, okay? Gratitude. Importance of gratitude in major gift solicitation, okay? After receiving a major gift, it's crucial to maintain the relationship and show ongoing gratitude. That's one of the big difficulties we have in the church. We ask somebody for $2 million to help build a church, and then once the church is built, we don't talk to them as much anymore, okay? That's bad. That doesn't, if you had relationships like that, what kind of friends would you have? Not very good ones, right? Thank people, prompt and sincere gratitude after the gift is made. Provide updates on how their gift is being used and the impact it has made and ongoing engagement. Keep the donor engaged with the organization through regular communication, invitation to events and prayer. Even in your parish campaigns, make sure that every single month you're updating people and thanking people as to what's happening with your projects. Okay? Even if it's, we had another meeting, we're waiting for approval. Thank you again for all of your generosity and commitment to what we're doing. Okay? Fostering long-term relationships. Continue nurturing the relationship to inspire future gifts and deeper involvement and invite them to invite others to the mission of the work. They have friends too. Invite their friends to be a greater part of what you're doing. Okay? What are some just common challenges that you'll face? Fear of rejection. I get told no all the time. I'm married with 4 kids. Okay? It's not a big deal. No is not the end of the conversation. No could be the beginning of it. Okay? So don't be afraid about rejection. Inadequate preparation. This is where I stay focused on the fact that you must prepare. You must know your research. You must know what that person is doing and who they are. Because if you don't, then you're going to be insufficient in going into your visit. So this is where I'd love to be able to take the bishops aside and say, let your development officers spend the time that they need to spend and invest in major gift officers. It'll be the best investment you ever made. Okay. But they haven't invited me to any recent meeting. So, donor reluctance. Donors may need time or reassurance to commit. even in our process for following up with donors, we have a 3-day rollover process, we call it. First phone call, you wait 3 days, you send an email after 3 days, you send another phone call after 3 days, right? And so that this way, it's not like you're hammering them over the head, but you're reminding them that you'd like to see them and visit with them. Approach the process as a partnership with God's mission. Be open about the needs and the vision of the church and persist in engagement. Keep cultivating relationships even after setbacks. Even if it doesn't go well the first time around, that doesn't mean that that no is forever. That no might be no for right now, okay? Because people are at different points in their lives. Important steps. Successful major gifts programs begin with deliberate and diligent identification and cultivation, okay? You must do the work on the front side. You must, okay? Otherwise, it's going to be unsuccessful. If you're blessed to have a major gift officer or two, their concentrated efforts prior to a diocesan-wide appeal would provide a substantial foundation for your campaign major gift effort, okay? Have them start to vet people even before you get into the feasibility study. So that this way you know you're talking to the right people for your feasibility study. If you don't, discuss with counsel building in some major gift identification time and cultivation time. I would love that when we present our services to different dioceses and stuff and different institutions, the more time we can have up front, the more successful you're going to have. The problem is they feel like they're paying for something that they haven't seen the return on investment yet. Trust me, you will. Okay? So that's why I gave you that example before, is if you spent $400,000 in order to raise $20 million and that had to take a process of over 6 or 8 months to do, spend the time, spend the resources, get it done, you'll get it on the back end. Keep in mind that the best time to discuss a planned gift with a donor is within a short period of time after they have made a significant major gift, which is being deployed for good. Don't just invite them to the big gift and leave it alone. That $81 trillion in resources is sitting out there for the baby boomers. And they have the opportunity to make legacy gifts. And if they see that you took a major gift and did something great with it, they're going to be much more likely to give you more resources in their estate. Don't wait too long in order to engage them. In the seminary campaign, we're engaging all of our major gift people now up until October and November. And then we're turning their names over to a planned giving committee that we started for them to start to re-engage them into a long-term in discussion about a planned gift to the seminary. So it grows beyond the campaign. In conclusion, successful major gift solicitation in the Catholic environment relies on deep research, authentic relationship building, and connecting the donor's faith with the mission of the church. And the process is about partnership, faith, and stewardship. Okay? Stewardship of their church. Cultivate trust and emphasize the spiritual aspect, impact of giving, and remember prayer and patience are essential throughout the process. And that is the presentation. Did I get it in time? All right, so we have a few minutes for questions? Okay, questions. Yes. Can you tell me who you are and where you're from?
Rachel Martinez, Fort Worth Diocese.
Nice to see you, Rachel.
The first phone call, 3-day send an email, 3-day phone call follow-up, is that following up on the ask or a visit?
That's to engage the first the visits, right? That's what we usually do with that. That's a great question. So once you begin the communication trail, you have to keep that going until you get that first engagement. Now, the first engagement is not always going to be your ask. It's going to be your getting to know meeting, right? Figure that you have to probably have 3 to 4 meetings before an ask. In this situation, if you are just engaging in a major gift solicitation, for let's just say an annual appeal, okay, or something of that nature. And if this is new to your diocese that they haven't done it yet, you've got to figure the ask shouldn't come until the 3rd, maybe 4th visit. But really, what you're trying to do in those first 3 visits is get to know the person, talk about the mission of the church, and then ultimately what you want them to do is to give you the obstacles that they have in giving you a gift. So you can answer those questions, overcome those obstacles, and then put that person in the position for the ask on the 3rd or 4th visit. Okay, does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay, good. Other questions? Yes.
Do
Okay.
Quick one is, Katie Price in the Diocese of Springfield in Illinois.
Okay.
And then, up there is the Diocesan Capital campaign's going to raise 1 to 1.5 times. Is that the same for parishes? I thought parishes could raise like 2x.
Parishes can usually do 2 to 5 times depending upon the pledge redemption. No. No, and here's for parishes in the room. If you're doing restoration, renovation, debt reduction, it's 2 to 3 times your annual offertory. If you're building new space, 4 to 5 times your annual offertory.
Oh. Okay, so.
You all right? You're gonna make it? Okay, all right.
Because we like have already launched materials. Yeah. I'm in real trouble.
Okay.
My second one is, we're a mission advancement office that inherited a broken annual appeal a couple of years ago. We blew it up. We no longer do a diocesan annual appeal. So we have a list of...
So the question is, you got rid of the annual appeal.
Now we just do monthly tithing.
Okay.
So we kind of are a blank slate.
Mm-hmm.
Mission Advancement Office, which is very fun, but very challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Because now we started a designated kind of priestly vocations, Bishop's Gift Society appeal last year. So we are starting to have touch points with major donors just by what they gave from the previous appeal. But now we're really starting from scratch because no longer do we have donors writing checks to pay their tax bill for AXA. It's now they can really designate their giving to a variety of different things at the dice.
Okay.
But we're looking at a database of 40,000 people and going, where do we even begin as a mission advancement office? So it's kind of like if you had a blank slate for...
Oh.
Right? It is super exciting.
Yeah.
And then daunting at the same time.
So do you intend to reinstitute some type of an annual appeal?
No.
Okay. So you're going to keep it in silos, right? You're going to keep it in particular silos.
Yes.
There's good parts about that and there's challenging parts about that. Okay? The challenging parts about that is you're going to end up cannibalizing donors from one to the other. You could potentially do that. The other thing is that you want to develop the idea of the annual appeal is to develop donors who are giving to all aspects of the mission, right? That's really what the goal is. In doing that and creating silos, you don't want to create competition amongst the silos, especially in the church. The last thing you need is more bureaucracy, right? So I would just be very, very careful how you do that. The way that which is challenging from your standpoint, and I'm thinking about it from a database management standpoint, is now you're going to have to identify and say, I would be going out to people and saying, these are our priorities, our case priorities, and saying, I'd like you to share with me first and foremost, if you had to prioritize these, what order would you put them in? That's what I'd be saying to my donors. And so this way now, I can sit there and segment my database a little bit according to, the problem that I see for you is, when you get a new ordinary, you're gonna have to start all over. Because the new ordinary most likely is gonna come in and say, why don't you have an annual appeal? So if anyone's thinking, Katie's resume is going out. All right. So, yeah. But that's the only thing. See, that's the challenge in the church is that since leadership changes, ideas change, right? And bishops change and they come up with different ideas. And one minute you're going down this path and next minute you're going this way. And if it was not for the Holy Spirit, our church would not exist. I mean, that's the absolute truth, okay? Because we're dependent upon changing management styles. Now, that works when you're CEO of firms, right? They'll do that and change, Amazon can change out somebody or Google can change out somebody or AT&T can change out somebody. But when you're doing it on a mission-based institution like the church and you're doing it with people that can have different philosophies regarding that, that becomes a little bit more challenging. So the one thing I would make sure that you do, Katie, is that set this up in a way that you kind of create the silos with the hope that if you get a new ordinary, you can merge those silos back into an annual appeal and that you cross over the donors. So, for instance, if I have a donor whose leadership thought process is or mission thought process is Catholic Charities, okay, and that's going to be something they can invest in, get them to do Catholic Charities and then get them to do another gift to, let's say, seminary education and things like that and bridge them across those silos so that this way, when the time comes, that you get a new ordinary and you get a new annual appeal, you can merge them back into that process. Does that make sense to you? Mm-hmm. Okay. Questions? Yes, sir. Yeah.
In either case, did the funds that you raised kind of readjust your expectations of the campaign? In other words, did you try and expand the $50 million higher because you kind of pulled in more?
The rector wants to. Right. So the rector's at the point where he's excited. So we anticipated 20 to 30 million in the leadership phase. Okay. The limitation that the seminary has versus the diocesan database would have is that they don't have the depth that an archdiocesan or diocesan database does. So we're going to run out of donors. What we have done, though, which is logistically interesting and exceptionally challenging for Lori Whitfield, who's in the back, my vice president, and our staff, is that they have men coming from, at first when we started, 9 different dioceses. Now it's 11 different dioceses throughout the Midwest and around the country. Okay? This campaign, once it's launched, is also going to be launched in Madison, Wisconsin, La Crosse, Wisconsin, Superior, Wisconsin, like all of the places that they have men coming from. And so we're going to have commitment weekends, receptions, and direct mail and different things like that that's happening in all those areas. We don't fully know 100% what we're going to get from them. Like the Diocese of Madison, thankfully, has committed to raising $5 million for us. The Diocese of La Crosse is committed to raising $4 million. But the only reason we know that is because we went out during the feasibility study, and I said to Father Luke before we even started the feasibility study, is I said, I need to speak to all the bishops. I need to know how committed they are. And the first reaction to that was, I don't think they want to talk to you. Right? But really, in essence, what it did do is have everyone talking about the mission of the seminary and how it impacted them. Ideally, I would love to have all 11 dioceses do what we're inviting them to do. But, for instance, in Springfield, okay, it's Springfield, right? No, I'm trying to think.
Springfield, Illinois?
You're a bishop?
Rocky.
No, not him. I just jumped out of my head. Rockford. And Bishop Rockford, for instance, he's starting a diocesan campaign. So he's, in that position, he's like, I can only do limited stuff for the seminary. Where Bishop Hyen, who's the Diocese of Madison, was the former rector of the seminary. He's been fantastic, right? Because he's really juiced up about it. So logistically you have to balance all that. But one of the yes, will we most likely expand this goal? Yes. We're probably going to launch with a primary goal and a challenge goal is going to be what we're going to do, okay? But the feasibility study originally, a lot of people, even just so much as 8 months ago, 9 months ago, were saying to us in the feasibility study, the difficulty was, oh, we just made our gift to the Love One Another campaign, and now you're going to be asking us for another gift. Think about that. They just made 5-year pledges to the Archdiocesan campaign, and now these people are coming forward making these. That's how amazing some of the generosity that we're seeing is. It's really a lot of fun. But yes, to your point, we most likely will have to expand this. And quite frankly, I go back to my clients, and I'll be the first one to say this, is I'm not expanding this goal unless I could statistically prove that it's going to be successful. I have to be able to see it in numbers. Because in the background, as much as I'm a guy who talks with two hands when he's presenting, I'm a statistical person in the background. I need to be able, and Lori will tell you, everything that I do is statistical in the background, because the last thing I want to do is put a priest, a layperson, a bishop out there to do a campaign or to say something that they're going to deliver that they can't deliver. Okay. Yes.
So in Texas, we're growing and we need to build churches and schools and all of that. And I was in another session where they said capital campaigns are generational. Like, and I heard that as each generation gets one capital campaign.
Oh, nay, nay.
But I know we're not doing that.
Right.
And so I'm thinking with like a case statement and all that, should we put everything together, or should we?
So the real question then becomes, do you master plan or do you put case statements forward that you're doing now? Okay. The first thing and the most important thing that I would say is that you have to be practical about what you're trying to raise. If statistically you can't prove what you're able to do. So we've seen this happen. This happened in the Archdiocese of St. Paul, Minneapolis for many years when Archbishop Flynn was the Archbishop. He went out and let numerous parishes, dozens of parishes, take out third-party loans to be able to build. They have like $800,000 in annual revenue, and they let them borrow $12 million in order to build a church. Okay? How do you pay a loan like that back? You can't. It's hard, right? So we ended up doing debt reduction campaigns for them years later and getting rid of, like, they had $64 million, and we got rid of like $59 million of the debt. But being very practical and honest and transparent with the people, saying, this was a bad decision, let's help fix this. Anytime, we just had this in Chesterfield, Virginia, in the Diocese of Richmond. We had a parish that wanted to put forward a $7 million case statement. And right from the time they hired us, I said, you can't raise $7 million. I said, we'll test it in a feasibility study, but you can't raise it. And they were like, but we want to test it. We want to see what the people do. We come back and we basically tell them that they're capable of raising $3 million, right? And that they had two different projects, building a brand new church or building a formation center, right? And so the people more selected the formation center over the church. So we told them to put that first, right? Because the people selected it. And the reaction has been tremendous from the people. The first four gifts that we got, now we have a $3 million goal. We have four gifts totaling $400,000. And the reason, just starting out the campaign. And the reason why we have that is because we listened. We were transparent. We told the truth, okay? And people like the truth. And so what I would say is, in the circumstances like places that are growing tremendously, everyone says, oh my gosh, we had 1,000 families 5 years ago. Now we've got 3,000 families. A lot of it has to do with immigration, right? Coming into the country, especially down in Texas, and the Hispanic population growing dramatically. Or just transplant populations. Now what they're going to turn around and say is, we need a church that seats this. Yes, but do you have the investment from the people that could provide it? You have to be honest with the steps that you're going to have to take. And if you can only raise $5 million the first time, tell them $5 million. We're going to have to borrow $3 million. We're going to have this, and we're going to come back to you in 6 years and do a debt reduction campaign, right? We're going to be transparent about that right up front. You'll buy credibility with the people, and you'll have greater success in the long run. Yes. So if you're doing a typical parish campaign the way that we do them, you're going to do a feasibility study. It's going to take you 6 to 8 weeks long, okay? That's usually what our feasibility studies are. And then your capital campaigns are 12 to 14 weeks long. So you have to put – you pretty much have to put somewhere around 20 weeks or half a year aside for that process. The feasibility study is quieter, so it's not a public aspect in the sense that you're not soliciting gifts from a standpoint of making pledges. So you're not worried about that, but – if you're doing it with your annual appeal, if the annual appeal falls within, let's say, the fall and you want to do a fall campaign, depending upon the diocese, some let you include it in your capital campaign. Some want you to do it outside of the capital campaign. And you'd have to think about the structure of that and what benefits you the most from a parish standpoint. But you're usually about 6 months total time frame from start to finish, and you should have about 20% of the resources that are raised at the end of the capital campaign, because we usually ask for a 10% down payment when people are making their pledges. And ultimately what ends up happening is most times we get 20%. So let's say you have a $3 million goal. You'll end up with $600,000 in cash at the end of the active campaign. So that helps you to plan from a standpoint of like architects or engineers or contractors, whatever it might be. The reason why you end up with 20% is because we ask for 10% down, but some people may do stock transfer gifts, which gives you more money up front. You do IRA charitable rollovers. And then seniors sometimes say, I don't want to make a 3 or a 5 year pledge because I don't know if I'm going to be here, right? My theory has always been God automatically gives you the 5 years when you make a 5 year pledge, but so that's why you usually end up with about 20%. So from a planning financial standpoint and logistical standpoint, figure it's going to take you 6 months from start to finish, and then you'll have about 20% of the cash available. And then depending upon your redemption period, whether it's 3 years or 5 years, you're going to end up with that proportionate 80% split up according to that for redemption purposes. Yes, Carrie.
On your wealth screen, is there a certain organization that you recommend?
We usually use donor search mostly.
And how frequently do you recommend
running the data? See, one of the things I would say is probably every 2 years, because there are changes, especially with death, movement, transiency, things like that. I would do it every 2 years on a diocesan end. For parishes, it would be much more oriented towards the idea of doing it really when you're coming up to major capital events, and doing it as part of our services. When we do campaigns, we run your database for you. So we do that and we run your donors, for you, because we want to know. Because before I send the pastor out to do a personal visit, I want to make sure I understand and know who he's visiting. Am I out of time? I'm way out of time. Okay. All right. I'll stay around for a couple of minutes for any one-on-one questions. If you would like, Lori's in the back. Say hi to Lori, everybody. Okay. Lori spent 20 years as director of stewardship for the Diocese of Rockville Center, and then I dragged her away from there. And so I'm thankful for that. And so Lori's going to have some information in the back for you, some just the cards. Right. If you want to copy the slides, she's got cards there. Just fill them out, and we'd be more than happy to do it. And be more than happy to answer any questions. God bless you guys, and have a great conference. Great.